formal education at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, where she studied literature and theater. For many years, she was on the faculty of a Mennonite college in Winnipeg, now Canadian Mennonite University, and then at Canadian Bible College in Regina. Her areas of study indicate many of her interests. She enjoys attending theater, a local book club, and Voice, which is a literature group based at First Baptist Church. She is a member of our diaconate. She is a member of the sanctuary choir and also is involved in a Bible study group. She is an ardent, although not particularly proficient, gardener. That was her statement. Esther lives with a little schnoodle named Cleo, who, like Shakespeare's Cleopatra, is of infinite variety. Sometimes she is truly lovable, but at others, a very real challenge. Now, she's referring to her pet there, not herself. I thought that was confession. No. Esther is deeply grateful to have had a career in teaching and has enjoyed working with students in Canada, China, Lithuania, and Russia. She has met wonderful people everywhere and likes to remind others not to judge a people by their politicians. One of the things she enjoys about FBC is a congregation of people who come from many nations. And in just a few minutes, we'll call on Esther to share with us. You're the speaker, you can do what you choose.
Oh, good. I am a part of all that I have met, yet all experience is an arch where through gleams that untraveled world whose margin fades forever and forever as I move. How dull it is to pause, to make an end, to rust unburnished, not to shine in use, as though to breathe were life, life piled on life, were all too little. I hope some of you remember those lines from your high school days. They're from Tennyson's Ulysses, and have been my favorites for years. Since time is short, John tells me, I will speak about living and working in foreign countries and not say anything about teaching in Canada. I've taught in China and Lithuania and Russia, and I will speak to you about the land and the people in those places as I have observed them, and of my teaching there, my work there. In each case, I was a volunteer, at least from my point of view, I was. In China, they paid me something like $200 or $250 a month, which was more than the Chinese professors made. But in the other countries, I didn't receive any money, and I knew that, of course. Each country was very interesting. I can't say anything comprehensive about them in this small period of time, but I will give you some illustrations of what I think is rather typical of the people and of the land. Well, after seeing in print three times this first line, I'm a part of all that I've met, you might well ask, in what way, you know, is there a part of you in these different countries? Well, I realize definitely that I have not left a great mark anywhere. But I have left a witness to Christ in these places. Through my teaching, I hope that in some small way, some lives have been changed for the better. And in each case, I have left part of my heart. Of course, the converse is also true. I received that, that I treasure and will always be a part of my life. I'll begin with China. I was there in 1991, the year after Tiananmen Square.
Wow.
You know what that meant, although I never felt unsafe. But the place felt very foreign. I don't know. Has anyone here been to China? Okay. Would you agree? It felt very foreign. the atmosphere, especially at first, seemed very strange, and it seemed to me that the paganism was almost palpable. The people, on the other hand, were very friendly people. They were so very welcoming, and I appreciated that a lot. That made up for it. I think of them as friendly, as people who can endure, and as people who are very resourceful. I'll give you a couple of illustrations. Their use of the cycle, not only George, I can turn it on. Not only the bicycle, but also the tricycle. They were quite common. Now, you might think, you know, you can't move a whole room full of furniture on a tricycle, but they can, and they do. They just simply pile it all up and tie it on, and there is one person driving that. They're exceptionally strong people. And it was the same with the bicycle. I mean, of course, you know that there are millions of bicycles in China, etc. And if they wanted to move something, they only had a bicycle, well, they would just pile things onto their bicycle, tie them all down, and often there was no room for the rider. So they just walked beside the bicycle and transport whatever they had from one place to another. I mean, it was just quite amazing to me. And no one except, you know, the foreigner would think that was amusing in the least. It was just an ordinary thing to do. I actually saw a woman, looked like an elderly woman, pull a hay rack down a country road all by herself. It wasn't as big as our hay racks, but I'd say about two-thirds of the size. It was just an amazing thing. And the farmers who lived around the university where I was teaching, were also very resourceful. It was common to see a farmer who had cleaned out our latrines and put the stuff into big pails and carried them on the shoulders, you know, as they do, head out from the university to his farm in order to use that as fertilizer. I used to hold my breath as this thing was passing. I didn't see him doing anything like that. I taught under the auspices of the Mennonite Central Committee in Sichuan Teachers University in Chengdu, which is just south of central China, the real China, as they sometimes say. I was stationed with a couple who were career missionaries and who were everything that missionaries should be. I taught literature and linguistics at the university. The communist leaders, who were very active among the students, had their offices on the floor just above my classroom. But they never bothered me. They didn't say anything except hello. As you can imagine, I was not allowed to witness directly to Christ in the classroom. But I took opportunities as they presented themselves, as you may imagine. For example, I was able to teach 17th century literature, which includes the poetry of John Donne, Sir Philip Sidney, and you may be sure I took advantage of that. No one ever gave me a negative response. And other opportunities in teaching Shakespeare and Lady Macbeth, for example. Remember the scene in which Lady Macbeth is trying desperately to rub the blood from her hands, which no longer exists. But because of the weight of sin in her life, she had become mad. And so they call in the doctor to see if he can help her. He observes her and then says that famous line, "More needs she the divine than a physician." And so I was able to speak about the weight of sin in our lives, about the need for God's forgiveness, etc. And again, there was absolutely no negative reaction to that. I'm grateful for those kinds of opportunities. A few of the students asked to come to church with me on Sunday. One of those is a Christian today and has been instrumental in bringing her her husband to Christ. Students would come to my apartment in the evening, knock on the door, and ask if I would come for a walk with them. And since the university was right on the edge of town, we could walk in the country, and had many wonderful times together with the students in that place. I guess we all have a funny life story to tell, and I want to tell a short one before I leave this. I need to say at the beginning that I am a pacifist, okay, so keep that in mind. One day, the translator came into my room after I had been away and said to me, "While you were away today, there were some men here. They saw your picture and wanted to see if you want to know if you want to be on TV." I said, "I thought, you know, it would be a sort of talk show thing, like Why Are You in China sort of things." So I said, "Well, I guess I could do that." Well, then it came out that it wasn't that at all. What it was, that I was to be in a movie for TV. I was to leave the city for another place for 2 weeks for the shooting, and I was to play the part of the Minister of War. I thought later, I should have said, "I'll have that picture back. I don't know what you showed him." But anyway, I sent him packing. I enjoyed the students and the people, all of the people. I don't remember an unfriendly person in all of China. But I have to admit, I came home exhausted after the 11 months there. I had lost almost 20 pounds. I was quickly for a rest. Lithuania. I taught there from 1997 to intermittently from 1997 to 2001, altogether about 2 years. Yes, I want to show a picture of Lithuania because many people have forgotten where it is. It's part of the Baltic states and the southernmost of the Baltic states. Remember this because I want to talk about them, just say something about them all in a minute. Estonia in the north. Tallinn isn't marked here, but Tallinn is there. Their capital city, and Riga in Latvia, and the capital city of Lithuania is sort of quite far south. Vilnius is the capital. When I think of this country, I think of poor, broken-down Lithuania. In 1997, they were in the wake of the breakdown of the Soviet Union in that area. Lithuania was overrun and subjugated by both Germany and Russia in the 20th century alone. The Soviets occupied the country for almost 5 decades and left it very run down. The Lithuanians, meanwhile, suffered. There were signs of their atrocities. The Soviets had shipped many Lithuanians to Siberia. I was told that they had shipped the entire intelligentsia off to Lithuania, off to Siberia. And many of them died there. And it needs to go upside down a little bit. Yeah. Many of them died there. When I would go downtown from the dormitory, I would pass through a very small, as you see here, memorial park. And in it, the Lithuanians had placed plaques along banks, etc., that contained the names and dates of the people who were sent to Siberia and who never returned. So in a way, it was their graveyard. And in the center was this figure that I found so very moving. It's so obvious that he's in deep pain and sorrow. He had a metal ring around his head that seemed to be pressing in on his head. And it was their way of remembering the people that didn't come back. When I went to the market, I would see a cathedral, a fairly new cathedral, and apparently it was built with help from the Lithuanian international community. And one could see in the steeple a seam about, oh, a third of the way up. I was told that during the Soviet era, the Soviets cut off the steeple because they wanted to use it as the building as a concert hall. I have a friend who lives very close by, and she told me that she would lie in bed at night and hear them sawing off the steeple of the church. Now, of course, it's been patched, and you can see though that mark, and it's a reminder of what it was like to live there during the Soviet era. The country was run down in many ways. There were many boarded up buildings, whereas the Chinese people had been so very friendly. Lithuanians on the street and in the shops were very sober and would never smile. And all the time I was there, it had been about 2 years, I remember one clerk in one shop giving me a smile. They simply were very, very serious. And on the streets, when you passed them, they were generally would be looking down. And I was told that during the Soviet era, people were nervous about anyone wanting to communicate with them with their eyes on the street, perhaps for some subversive reason. And so they got in the habit of looking down when they walked down the street, and they were still doing that. A Lithuanian colleague told me that during the Soviet era, they were not encouraged to be polite because politeness was associated with capitalism. I think, you know, I could enlighten you on that one. Now, mind you, the people I knew were not rude. I wouldn't say that. During the occupation, they engaged in peaceful protest. And one of the very interesting ones in which they'd done that was to establish a hill of crosses. It had begun in response to a war in which soldiers had not returned to their homes. And so people started putting crosses on this hill in northern Lithuania. As years went on, during the Soviet era, it became a place of peaceful protest. The Lithuanians wanted to proclaim their own nationalism and their own faith. Lithuania is Catholic. And so they planted crosses. The Soviets bulldozed them down three different times. And each time, the Lithuanians planted more crosses. According to the internet, there are about 100,000 crosses in that place. It's not a beautiful place. There are far too many crosses. I mean, it's just jammed with crosses. Although there are paths, you can walk through the paths, etc. But it is a remarkable place, and it's one that they feel quite, well, they feel, I guess, a certain pride in it. Do you remember Gorbachev and Perestroika? His policy of reforming the economy and the political system. This was done during the 1980s. During that time, the Lithuanians became restless, but they did not take up arms. They agitated for independence, but did not take up arms. They did some other things. They tried dialogue. One I know met with Gorbachev and asked that during this restless time, there would not be any violence against them, but Gorbachev did not give that promise. And there was some violence later on. And, can you hear this, John? They sang. How about that? Yes.
Good people.
Yes, I should say. They would meet by the thousands in both Lithuania and Estonia. They gathered in public places and sang nationalistic songs and Christian hymns. And so they became a part of what is still referred to as the Singing Revolution. On August 8, 1989, they formed a 600-kilometer human chain from Estonia. That's why I was pointing out, well, it's not there anymore. Don't put it on. From Tallinn in the north, in Estonia, through Latvia, all the way to Vilnius. at least a million people. Some say a couple of million people. And they did this to draw attention to their plight. But what an interesting way to do that without, you know, going to war, etc. In 1990, the Lithuanians announced their independence. And the struggle wasn't over. The Soviets attacked and killed some people in Vilnius. But that happened only once. The Lithuanians persisted for their demand for freedom, and slowly they did move their way to freedom. I was there at first in 1997. I taught at Lithuania Christian College, which is a college funded by people in Europe and North America. It is today, if you look it up on the web, it's Lithuanian International University. I was able to teach altogether, intermittently, between 97 and 2001 for 2 years, and taught literature and speech. When I came in 1997, the school was renting a space at the University of Klaipeda, which was the city in which we taught, on the east coast of Lithuania. It was a building left over from the Soviet era. And I always thought this building redefines the word dismal. It was an incredibly dismal place. You hardly knew whether to laugh or cry. It was very poorly lit because you couldn't afford more electricity. In the hallway, only every second light would be lit. And the linoleum on the floor was so badly torn, you had to be careful not to trip as you went down the hall. And it stayed like that for months. It seemed that in the wake of the Soviet era, when a thing was broken, it was broken. That happens. And you just, life goes on. It's as though they didn't know anything about fixing. And actually, I would have to say in their defense, there wasn't money either to fix things. I lived in a dormitory that was newly renovated by my school. It was Spartan, but certainly adequate. Although I've said that the Lithuanians were very serious, I would say that our students were friendly and industrious. They were everything you would want students to be. It is a liberal arts college, not a Bible college. And anyone who has the academic standing is able to come, and also someone who has to pay would be able to pay some tuition. Although there are many people who help students, people in North America, for example, who send money so that students who don't have enough money to pay tuition can come. I worked very hard but enjoyed my teaching. It was the only time I had the opportunity to teach a complete short course in Shakespeare. And this, marking aside, was pure pleasure. Russia. I confess I had a negative attitude toward the Russian people during my years in Lithuania. All that was dispelled during the years 2003-2008 when I taught in a series of 5 summer language institutes held in St. Petersburg, Russia. That school is sponsored by the Evangelical Free Church of Canada. If you only have 1 week to spend in Europe, know that St. Petersburg and environment has enough in history and beauty to make the entire trip worthwhile. It's a very beautiful place. But to see the many sumptuous palaces and churches built before the communist era is to realize that there was a good reason for the revolution. It wasn't a good revolution, but there was a reason for it. I was able to see a great deal of St. Petersburg during that time, but I would often have to turn offers to see the city down, especially after class, because I wanted to have enough energy to face the next teaching day. It just was so much to see. It's very interesting. When I think of Russian people, I don't think of Vladimir Putin. I don't think of Medvedev. I think of warm and generous people. I think of Olga, a friend of mine, a middle-aged woman who teaches and who lives in a hostel where she has to share the kitchen and the bathroom. And she says she expects to live there for the rest of her life. In other words, she can't think of being in a financial position to live anywhere else. I think of Vestibulov. Yes, that's the name. Vestibulov, who had recently come to the point of seriously considering Christianity when he met me upon my return in 2008. He shook hands with me and said, "I have been praying all year that you would come back." I think of a small group of our students who meet each week for Bible study. They sent me an e-card this Christmas with appropriate Christmas greetings, etc. And on the last page they said, "We have told Santa to pack you into his bag and bring you to us." Unfortunately, I'm not able to do that anymore. I have to say that the Russians that I met were the most loving people that I have known. My teaching in Russia was in this English seminar and was geared, actually the whole seminar is geared to the teachers of English. So we were teaching Russians who teach English in the schools. Others may attend. The tuition is minimal and needs to be, because at that time at least the salary was about 250 US a month. And real estate in St. Petersburg is expensive. The cost of living is really quite high. I taught what was useful to teachers: poetry, drama, reader's theater, story theater, how to direct a play, etc. Each day, besides the classes, we would meet for what we call sing and share, during which time we would sing songs for use in the schools, as well as Christian songs. And this was followed by a talk on Christian truths, something similar to a sermon, but perhaps not quite as formal. These meetings were not compulsory, but were very well attended. As you see, I have left, indeed left, part of my heart in Russia and in all three places where I have taught. And it might seem that I'm heartless now, but as you know, the heart doesn't diminish with the giving. I would like to close with my favorite line from John Bailey's Diary of Private Prayer. "For the great and mysterious opportunity of my life, I praise and worship thee, O Lord." Amen.
Thank you, Esther, very much for a heartfelt journey that you have shared with us. We are very fortunate people in this church to have such a wide variety of individuals, experiences, and journeys, and it is always so interesting to be able to hear from some of those individuals. Thank you all once again for coming out. Our next meeting is February the 28th. We are still looking for another coordinator for Achievers and a treasurer. And I thank Donna Kish. She asked me on Sunday, "Do you have anybody to decorate the tables?" And I said, "No, no one has stepped forward." Remember, she had resigned just before Christmas because of Joe's health. And she said, "Well, Joe is still driving, so I will come down and decorate the tables." And so we still need someone to step forward who would be willing to decorate the tables, who would be willing to help plan, lead Achievers. It's your group. So if anyone is interested, please speak to myself or John Hilmer. It would be greatly appreciated. If you could clear off the tables, you can leave the tables up, the chairs up, the custodian will take those down, but we need to clear the tables. Thank you all very much. February 28th is the next one. Website www.achieversregina.ca if you want information on the topic and the speakers.
It was lovely.